Good morning. Today is Monday, the 3rd of November. My name is John Endres, and this is the latest risk alert from the Center for Risk Analysis. This is a service for CRA subscribers brought to you every Monday morning at 7 a.m. by the CRA, helping you make better decisions. In this week's risk alert, we begin with a recent polling finding that shows rising levels of support for military rule in South Africa. We then turn to the fractious politics of KwaZulu-Natal, before reporting on a biosecurity risk to South Africa's economy. We close with a look at the trade deal between the US and China. But we begin with the latest survey by Afrobarometer, a pan-African non-partisan research network, which shows that support for military rule in South Africa rose from 28% in 2022 to 49% in 2025. However, 42% of respondents opposed a military takeover, and 49% believed democracy was preferable to other government systems. And this represents a 9 percentage point increase from 2022, the lowest recorded level. The Afrobarometer survey was conducted between June and July 2025. That means it coincided with KwaZulu-Natal Police Commissioner Lieutenant General Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi's 6th July press conference, where he wore camouflage uniform, was surrounded by masked police officers bearing semi-automatic weapons, and accused then Police Minister Senzo Mchunu of ties to criminal gangs. Amid public disgust with corruption, this spectacle by General Mkhwanazi made him a national folk hero, possibly skewing survey data. The Afrobarometer survey further revealed 70% dissatisfaction with how democracy functions in South Africa. That was highest among the poor at 79%, middle-aged respondents at 77%, and the unemployed at 76%. This aligns with the Economist Intelligence Unit's 2024 Democracy Index, the latest available, which ranked South Africa 43rd globally with a score of 7.16, citing weak political culture and classifying South Africa as a flawed democracy. The results of the Afrobarometer survey should not be misinterpreted as a desire on the part of South Africans to give up their hard-won democratic freedoms wholesale. Instead, it is an expression of frustration with limited socio-economic progress and a hankering for more effective leadership. South Africans want prolonged government failures in economic growth, job creation, clean governance, and the provision of basic services to be addressed. The longer this is not done, the more their dissatisfaction places at risk the government of national unity's legitimacy as a vehicle for reform. South Africa's democracy faces no immediate threat of a coup. However, growing voter unhappiness will find other outlets, including support for radical and populist parties, as well as ongoing social protests and occasional flare-ups of violent unrest. That brings us to KwaZulu-Natal, where political trouble is brewing as Jacob Zuma's Umkhonto we party mounts an aggressive push to seize control of the province. The party tabled a motion of no confidence in the provincial premier, Tami Ntuli of the Inkatha Freedom Party, on 23 October. The KwaZulu-Natal Government of Provincial Unity, or GPU, consists of a precarious four-party alliance. It is made up of the IFP, the ANC, the DA, and the National Freedom Party, or NFP. Altogether, this coalition controls 41 of 80 seats in the KwaZulu-Natal legislature. The MKP controls 37 seats, and if it can convince the NFP with its one seat to switch sides and also bring the economic freedom fighters with its two seats on side, it would create an even 40-40 split in the legislature and deprive the current GPU of its majority. The GPU's control of the legislature would then evaporate. In that case, the IFP-ANC-DA bloc can survive a no-confidence vote only if it remains perfectly united and disciplined. The tiebreaker vote of the Speaker, Nontembeko Boyce of the ANC, might temporarily preserve Mr. Ntuli's premiership, but the province would likely become mired in legislative deadlock. A split legislature would prevent legislation or budgets from being passed with the required simple majority, all but paralyzing governance requiring legislative action. such paralysis could invite national intervention. Under the Constitution, prolonged dysfunction in a provincial government allows the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, which is currently led by IFP President Velenkosini Hlabisa, to step in. In an extreme case, a rerun provincial election could follow, an unprecedented event in South African politics. The immediate danger to the GPU comes from the recent shifts in the NFP's stance. Both the NFP president and the party's deputy secretary general have publicly signalled their willingness to back the MKP's motion against the government they helped establish last year, citing frustration with the GPU's performance. They have also expressed their readiness to cooperate with the MKP in government if, as they put it, our development priorities align. Concurrently, the MKP is said to be courting disaffected ANC figures, promising to retain some MEC positions in exchange for their support of the no-confidence motion. Yet the ANC remains generally cautious of any such collaboration, cognizant of the MKP's enduring hostility towards President Cyril Ramaphosa's national leadership of both the country and Mr. Zuma's former party. Well-placed sources from within KwaZulu-Natal politics have further indicated to the CRA that ANC factional tensions stemming from the start of the Zuma split from the ANC in 2021 are increasingly a source of concern for the IFP and the DA as GPU partners of the ANC. This precarious balance of forces leaves KwaZulu-Natal on a political knife edge, one vote away from either unprecedented institutional crisis or the first provincial rerun election in South African history. If it persists, the political instability is likely to feed through into government performance, service delivery, and social stability in the province. Next, we turn to farming, and as of mid-October, South Africa was dealing with 274 unresolved outbreaks of foot and mouth disease across five provinces. The disease is a highly contagious viral illness affecting livestock like cattle, sheep, goats, and pigs. Should South Africa fail to gain an adequate handle on the outbreaks, the country's farmers and meat exporters could face meat export bans by other countries. Along with rising costs incurred in preventing and managing outbreaks, as herds are culled, farmers' profits shrink, increasing their own financial pressures and future commercial viability. Further down the line, higher costs are passed on to consumers in the form of higher prices. While the latest round of outbreaks started in April 2025, South Africa first lost its foot and mouth disease free status in 2019. The recurring outbreaks are compounded by vaccine shortages and lax controls on animals outside commercial farming operations. The chair of the Southern African Agri-Initiative, or SAI, Theo de Jager, described the situation as follows, quote, "Take it out of a dysfunctional department, out of politics, and fight it with the best available expertise and technology. The state has not been able to do this for a very long time." End quote. For our last story, we turn to the trade relationship between the United States and China. And the leaders of those two countries, Donald Trump and Xi Jinping, got what they needed from their latest meeting: a lowering of trade and geoeconomic tensions. Following their meeting in South Korea last week, Mr. Trump said, quote, "I guess on a scale from 0 to 10, with 10 being the best, I would say the meeting was at a 12, end quote. As part of a set of mutual concessions, the US will pause port fees on Chinese ships, pause the Commerce Department blacklist of companies prohibited from buying US technology, and lower the fentanyl-related tariffs it levies on Chinese goods from 20% to 10%. The deal also averts the threatened 100% tariff on Chinese goods. In return, China will resume its purchases of US soybean, thereby muting loud complaints from US farmers, a key Trump constituency. It will also suspend or lift all retaliatory non-tariff countermeasures taken against the US since March 4, many of which affected a vast range of US agricultural products, and it will suspend the highly disruptive proposed export controls on rare earths and related products for a year. This gives the US more time to firm up alternative mining and processing agreements, similar to deals Mr. Trump announced with Australia before he met with his Chinese counterpart. Meetings with key US allies Japan and South Korea were also vital in this regard. The South African government's inability to reach a deal with the US, even while China, Australia, Japan, South Korea, and Cambodia are able to do so, is becoming increasingly noticeable. The positive tenor struck by both leaders squares well with Mr. Trump's ongoing endeavors to build a legacy of trade, investment, and peace deals. An underlying risk, however, is that an overly optimistic assessment takes US pressure off the Chinese economy, giving it more time to build supply chains with countries hit with high US tariffs, while dulling US focus on its chief geostrategic rival. That's it from us for this week. We hope you all have a good week ahead and look forward to speaking to you again next Monday morning.